Hello, welcome to the Comic Con Store. Tonight we'll be talking about Tom McFarlane's creation, Spawn. Of course, I'm my co-host, JD from Saskatoon.
Hello.
Also with us is Red Ink. So, Spawn is a creation that McFarlane has had in his mind a while. He used to like draw this character who vaguely looks like Batman meets Spider-Man ever since he was a teenager.
By way
And
of the Taskmaster's pirate-themed costume.
yes, and let's be extremely honest. It really is Batman meets well, symbiote Spider-Man, if we have to be very, very direct, because it's just it's very 90s, it's very McFarlane, and it's very Image, just the way that it's all written. And I know it sounds like an insult, but really it's a backhanded compliment when I say it that way.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with you, Ben, but call it its image. It became to represent Image, but it was not initially Image because they hadn't quite made their mark yet. But I get what you're saying with the whips, the chains and the spikes and I think Doctor Strange has a pimp collar costume. Well, watch this shit. I mean, the cape in and of itself became as much a character in the comics the way any of the artists have drawn it over the years as Spawn himself. I mean, honestly, when you look at the Wikipedia article, not one of the fan wikis, and you see that image of the prototype Spawn costume, is like, okay, that's either an alternate costume for Blotherblood from Titans, or he was creating some sort of pirate-themed supervillain and just loved the design and not the idea of the character. Because he's got the swashbuckler boots and the dinner plate belt buckle, and what do you call those circular things on a costume that like hold the cape in place?
Cape holders.
What? They're called brooches, I'm pretty sure.
I know I'm being funny.
Well, at least you're laughing. I remember when Spawn first came out, that Spawn number one image of, him crouched over awkwardly on something, and he's got his hand glowing with power and pointed right between his legs. He's like, well, my life sucks. I might as well end the pain now. I mean, that's, all things considered, it's a very dynamic image, and it's one of the most enduring pieces of Spawn art, in the history of the character. I mean, at this point, I think it's like they're somewhere in the 300s with Spawn, and I forget where they are with Double Dragon, or not Double Dragon, the Savage Dragon. But
Spawn is still going? Jesus Christ.
yeah, they literally never, it's been running almost within 5 or 6 issues of Savage Dragon, it's been running as long, but Savage Dragon kind of edges out in that competition because Eric Larson has never left that title. Like, he has been working on it consistently since it came out in, like, what, 92, 93.
Too bad nobody's ever read the comic.
Well, I highly doubt that they're just publishing it for shits and giggles at this point.
He's one of the founders of the company. I'm pretty sure he has some sort of deal in his contract where you have to continually publish my book as long as there's money in the coffers.
And we're not just talking about Larson either.
Yeah. A lot of the original founders of Image had those sorts of deals in their contract.
I mean, technically, Mark Silvestri is still part of Image, even though Top Cow is, like, he still has some sort of financial and business connection to Image, even though Top Cow is essentially its own publishing entity at this point. But yeah, I mean, McFarlane's been the one, when you talk about McFarlane and Spawn, he's like the Gene Simmons of the comics industry. Like, how Gene Simmons took Kiss and all their designs and iconography and have quote-unquote hoard them out to every possible licensee. McFarlane's kind of did the same thing. He's one of the first ones to, you know, turn his characters into toys, created the McFarlane toys with, you know, the whole, kind of started the whole Staction figure thing that came out in the 90s.
Yes, I still remember the listings for some of those toys that they made, like Rob Liefeld's 6-inch posable shaft.
Yeah. And you have 6 of those mint in box, don't you, Ben?
I never bought action figures. What are you talking about?
No, I just remember seeing shaft.
I can dig it.
I remember the first time I saw Spawn toys, and we're talking like the early 90s Ninja Turtles-esque Spawn toys, where Spawn comes with this requisite large cloak, and you can see the hinges in it, and he comes armed with this club-like 2x4 with a spike through it. And then you had, like, you know, Saigor, Overt Kill, the Violator, and the Clown, the Spawnmobile. Do you remember the Spawnmobile in the comics?
No.
Because he had one.
I remember, the only thing I remember about that toy is my friend bought one time, and he shaved it completely clean and made a Silver Surfer comp.
He turned it into the Surfer Mobile?
Not the Surfer Mobile. He's talking about the Spawn toy.
That's fucking hilarious. Now, Spawn's design, the original design, is like the excess of the 90s with like the asymmetrical bands and belts on the body. It's just a mess.
I mean, it got to that. I mean, originally, he just had like the 2 chains kind of coming out from like the brooches or whatever, on like his skull brooches on his cape, and he had some spikes around it. It's rather subdued compared to some of the later Spawn designs, and especially the current design where he's got like the giant anime boot sort of feet on when you look at the character. For some reason, they treated the chains like Spider-Man's webs initially. Like, it's just flowing all over the place and for seemingly no discernible reason.
Suit was supposed to be alive. I remember that.
Yeah, that's what it's even called, like an organism, I think.
Yeah, it's called like cape, a whole. His cape and his chains move on their own.
Yeah. And you got to look at the art. Like, for those that don't know the origin, Al Simmons is this special ops soldier assigned to like some nameless black ops operation within the American intelligence network, like CIA, NSA, and all that, directed by this guy named Jason Wynn. He's killed on a mission, and originally, and this is one of the first retcons I remember reading about in comics, he's killed on this mission by his partner, codenamed Chapel, who's this skull-faced guy who is apparently a member of Youngblood for a time. And then he makes a deal with this devil named Malbolgia, and, you know, he'll become a Hellspawn and lead his armies if he's allowed to go back to Earth and see his wife Wanda one last time. And Malbolgia agrees, but sends him back like 5 years later, strips him of his memories, and sends this. Do you think the Clown was designed to remind us of Tim Curry's It? Because I get those vibes.
No.
Like, creepy as all fuck, a lot of...
He's a creepy clown, but he's not, like, Pennywise at all.
Well, some of the design may have been inspired by, not expressly that, but... Yeah. And then, like I said, the retcon I read is they had... eventually they returned, or retconned it, so Jess Chapel... Like, the original Chapel didn't kill them, then there was this redheaded assassin that worked for Jason Wynn, and then they just started adding in all this backstory that, you know, up until then we didn't know, like...
Isn't that from the movie?
Well, yeah, she was introduced in the movie, but then they folded that into the comic. And then they started adding stuff like Al's mother was a devil worshiper and he was marked from birth to become part of Malbolgia's army. And it just goes on and on from there. And what was your guys' first, like, how were you first introduced to Spawn?
I remember going to 7-Eleven and seeing the comic and, oh, well, Tom McFarlane drew this? Okay, I'll buy it. Oh, this is fucking garbage. It makes no sense.
I saw it in the comic shop when I was young. I bought the first issue as well. The first issue I saw wasn't a number one, but I bought the first issue I saw. And it was just a lot of excess. It was basically, hey, I'm doing my own book. Let's have some sex. Let's have some violence. Let's have some blood. And it was unrestrained, Todd McFarlane. And even as a kid, I felt like they're doing it because they can, not because it's a good story. Yeah, and then I saw the movie.
There are a few, not many, few good things about that movie.
John one Leguizamo of which is Mike as the violator,
as the clown, and Michael Jai White as Spawn. Not an Oscar-worthy performance, but he didn't camp it up too much, and I appreciate that. Martin Sheen, on the other hand, they just gave him a whole bag of cocaine and told him to go to town.
Well, that's how they got that one movie, that Vietnam movie. I forgot the name of.
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah, they gave Martin Sheen a bag full of cocaine and told him to go nuts. That's how we got that scene at the beginning where he punches a mirror.
He was battling alcoholism during the time. It wasn't cocaine.
I heard cocaine for that scene.
No, he's fucking drunk. He showed up on set drunk, and then he's supposed to film a different scene, and he just went fucking crazy, and they put it in the movie.
That's still funny. But the movie itself is, oh my god.
He actually injured himself and had to go to the hospital after that scene.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he cut his hand open. But the Spawn movie, I have this to say about it. It is pretty faithful to the book.
And yeah, it's faithful, and it's also emblematic of what they did with a lot of superhero or comic book based movies that came out in the 90s, where they take a lot of major events from the comic and try to squish it all into a 90 minute movie.
Now, I remember, I haven't seen the movie in years, by the way, but I do remember thinking that the guy who played Medieval Spawn was okay.
Oh, Cagliostro?
Is Medieval Spawn?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they eventually revealed that in the comics that the bum Cagliostro who was mentoring Spawn Red was actually Medieval Spawn at some point in the past.
And then he retconned not to exist because Neil Gaiman sued the fuck out of McFarlane.
Yeah.
And now they've got Medieval Spawn and Cagliostro again in the current storyline.
So are they the same dude or different dudes now?
I think they're different dudes now.
They're different dudes because the Medieval Spawn is no longer called Medieval Spawn. He's called Dark Ages Spawn.
Yeah, and they got Gunslinger Spawn and She Spawn and Anti Spawn, aka Redeemer, who's like a fallen angel.
Oh, they're all fucking dead. And they're gone.
Yeah.
Oh, not in the comic. I sadly watched the history of what happened to Spawn up until 2020 the other day, and it got fucking bad.
Oh, did they mention the part that the white guy that Spawn used to turn into when he would disguise himself in the comics was actually a wholly separate being, and eventually he became a Spawn as well?
And they never mentioned that at all.
Yeah, because in case you guys don't remember, and our listeners don't remember, in the early years of Spawn, several times Al would try to visit Wanda and his best friend Terry, who ended up marrying Wanda. He would try and disguise himself so he didn't look like, you know, Freddy Krueger on steroids, but he turned himself into a white man. And eventually, and I don't remember exactly how this happened, Al kills himself to stop the war between heaven and hell. And the same moment that he dies, this white guy, who is essentially the form that he would take, wakes up in a hospital, like out of a coma, and goes on to become like this messiah type character and also a Spawn at the same time. And then Al Simmons came back because McFarlane has plans.
Well, let's talk about when we're talking about characters with really weird legalities with them. We have to mention, you know, we already mentioned Dark Ages Spawn. We have to talk about Angela.
Oh, before we mention Angela, did you know that McFarlane got sued by a player from the NHL in the 90s?
No.
Because one of the recurring villains in the early years of Spawn comics, and back when I was reading it, was this Italian gangster named Tony Twistelli, a.k.a. Tony Twist. And there was I believe it was for the New York Islanders, there was a player with, you know, his name was actually Tony Twist. And he tried suing McFarlane for, you know, using his name without securing the rights. And I'm pretty sure they settled out of court to the point that the judge said, look, if I remember correctly, that he came up with the name, but he didn't base it off of that guy. But anyway, back to Mr. Gaiman and his lawsuits.
Yeah, so Angela is this really weird endemic angel character in Spawn that was created by Neil Gaiman as well. You know, another Neil Gaiman thing. And like in the 2000s, some legally stuff happened where it's like, okay, you can't use Angela anymore. And then I almost think for spite, Neil Gaiman sold the character to Marvel.
I don't think it was for spite. That lawsuit happened around the time that Gaiman was like, he had the rights to Marvel Man, and he was trying to work that deal out with Marvel. Because, you know, it's named Marvel Man, you can't call him that. And I think it was tied in with that deal of Marvel getting the rights to Marvel Man, and, you know, they wanted to include Angela in that deal, and they had that whole big lawsuit. And then she became Thor's sister.
She became She-Ra, the Thor's He-Man.
Well, I thought it was a little clear the way I said it, but sure, let's go with your analogy.
But, yeah, it's Angela is another really weird character. I mean, I think it's really hard to find characters in Spawn that...
How about you explain the She-Ra comment?
Okay, well, Angela, as introduced in Marvel, is an Asgardian that is Thor's secret sister that has been spirited away, kept safe somewhere else, just like Princess Adora in He-Man, She-Ra. Continuity.
In the heretofore unknown 10th realm, Heaven, H'VN.
Yes.
Just so they could still keep the whole angel design aesthetic.
Yes. And
pardon me?
Basically, she's used wherever someone needs a really strong chick. And they don't want to remember that they have like 30 of them. Like, she was parts of the Guardians of the Galaxy for a while, then the Asgardians of the Galaxy, and then some version of the Avengers, and then some sub team of the Avengers. It was basically, yeah, here's this chick. We paid some money for her, so you got to use her for a while. And really, that's the long and short of it.
And may or may not currently be in a relationship with Blade.
Yes.
I thought they made her a lesbian.
I think she's whatever the writer wants her to be, because she doesn't really have a definitive personality other than generic strong chick in the Marvel comics. In the Image comics, she was an angel, so she was a dick. Because all the angels in the Spawn comics were dicks.
Yeah, and then that goes towards, like, heaven wasn't really any better than hell when it came to the souls of humanity.
Well, in Spawn, they established that God's a fucking psychopath.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not kidding. Like, literally, Spawn's wife has twins, and her twins turn out to be the devil and God reincarnated. And they're both fucking psychopaths. And they start a fucking angelic war and shit. And there's a baby Spawn, like a baby kid, leading the army of the angels and all that shit.
Yeah.
Now, this is one of the endemic problems of Spawn, because I think that there are some interesting ideas in there, buried deep. And I know Red's shaking his head right now. But I think, like, there's so much Todd McFarlane's trying to be edgy that's just so heavy on top that it's lost.
Yeah. Spawn is basically, I went to Catholic school. I didn't like it. I blame my fucking parents. And this is all my fucking anger at Catholic school put into a fucking comic.
Yeah. Yeah, like... there might be some good ideas buried there, but I think there's so much of that shit on top, that edgelord bullshit, like edgelords even, and it's just you can't scrape it off. It's seeped in too deep.
It's like tar. Won't let go.
Like, the only interesting stuff happens in Spawn is, dare say, accidental or actually Neil Gaiman doing it.
Yeah, no, I mean, the base idea of Spawn, of this man dying and going to hell and making a deal with the devil, you know, that's Ghost Rider. But that's one of the things about Ghost Rider that a lot of people like, is, you know, why he made a deal. It's different across different characters like that. But, you know, Al dies, he wants to see his wife again. He's not exactly in the right frame of mind, so there's no lawyer in the world that would advise him to actually make this deal. And he gets screwed by the devil. Surprise.
Like, there's interesting aspects. Like, when it first started out, he had a limited amount of power, almost like a Green Lantern, except he didn't know how to use any of his fucking powers, which made it interesting.
And they established, if he uses all of his powers too quickly, you know, it's finite. No matter what, it's finite. There's no way that known to recharge it. Once he uses it all, it's gone. And just like the bum medieval Spawn, all he could do was form a blade with his fist. That's all the power he has left. And,
well, the bum teaches him to draw upon his suit.
Yes.
Which is an actual fucking living being and a demon in itself, instead of just using up his limited power that he has.
Right. But there are, like I said, there are interesting ideas. But I think that with other writers and things, you can see those ideas, you know, parts of the premise transform into something else. I don't know if it's inspired by Spawn or not, but there was this TV show in the late 90s that had a similar concept. You had a guy who was killed who wants to come back, and his condition is he has to hunt demons. It was a show.
Brimstone.
That, yes, yes.
And, there's a cop. Sorry, you go.
And there was even the aspect about his wife in there too. It's not a great show, but it had, I think, a much better premise because it didn't have too much stuff going on at one time. It's just one premise.
So, oh, and the big.
Go ahead, Red.
The big twist about Spawn is, L. Simmons was extremely abusive to his wife, and he completely forgot.
I am not surprised.
Well, it's not that he forgot, but Mel Bolger, you know, futzed with his memories before he sent him back. And that, And the brimstone thing, the whole idea of why the cop went to hell is a guy, a drug addict, raped his wife, and he hunted him down and killed him, and that would have been okay, but he enjoyed killing the guy, and that's why he went to hell. So,
I already know like, too much about brimstone.
My mind is like a black hole for information about stuff that I love. I think besides like the whole deal with the devil futzing with his memories and all that, and the back-assward situation Al Simmons finds him in, one of my favorite things of Spawn was the absolutely insane amount of, like, for the first time, I'm reading a comic where all the villains that he comes up against, like, he eventually takes them all out very graphically, but all of them, or almost all of them, are able to do serious damage to our hero, finger quotes, because, like, they just decided to, well, he's from hell, but why should he get messed up? So, I mean, you have the anti-spawn slash redeemer, you have the violator, Cygor, which is this giant cybernetically augmented gorilla, which is already on my list of favorite 8-base characters, Overkill, the freak, he fought, you know, like, went back in time and fought the medieval spawn, sorry, Dark Ages spawn, we don't want to get sued. And it's just, they kept coming with, like, these really gross variant on a theme villains for Spawn to fight, while also fighting against the machinations of Malbolgia and then eventually Heaven. And that led into, like, the McFarlane toys. I mean, to this day, they're known as being some of the most well-designed, you know, toy collectibles out there. Although for the first 10 years of their life, like I called them before, they were staction figures. You couldn't really, you can maybe move the arms a little bit, but other than that, they were locked into the poses that they come, you see them in the package, which can be good or bad. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about stuff like that, but you talked about the toys a little bit earlier.
I don't collect toys. I haven't since I was a child.
I just remember reading in, like, Toy Fair magazine whenever they would come out with a new Spawn line. And they had this one. It was a manga Spawn. So it was, everyone looked like giant, you know, mechs. You can kind of see that Spawn. That's Angela. That's the Violator. But they all looked like giant robots. That's a set I would love to collect. There's a few Spawn. Even had the, was it Spawn X was a toy line came out about 10 years ago, where Spawn characters were done in an animated style, like akin to, you know, Bruce Timm's Batman. And aside from the comics, I think that's one of the most unique things about Spawn's legacy is the amount of collectible stuff like that, that you can just take the character and put it into like a thousand different, areas and just come out with something really unique and cool to look at.
Now, I will give McFarlane some credit here in the fact that he was able to very easily and quickly market Spawn into a business empire of itself with toys, collectibles, movies, deals, animated series, etc. He was able to turn that into a media empire pretty quickly. I will give him credit for that. Go ahead, Rhett.
McFarlane understood that there was money in comics, but there was more money in merchandise.
Merchandising.
Yeah. I mean, because he was really... Sorry, you go, Ben.
Because it's just... you see lots of people that have, like, really great creations, really great ideas, and they weren't able to, like, get it off the ground. And... But McFarlane was able to take an idea that, as we say, is somewhat derivative, somewhat visually striking, and depending entirely on, like, his personality to push it and turn it into, like, all these different venues, toys, movies, etc. That is impressive.
And he's also very careful to, like, stick to stuff he knew. Like, he basically kept it to comics, collectibles, and then expanded into, you know, video games and the animated series and the movies. I don't think it was a bit much. I mean, certainly there is some, I don't know if it'd be hubris, but maybe even arrogance, but every episode of the Spawn animated series had that kind of Crypt Keeper like intro from McFarlane, which, well, I thought it was kind of dumb, and I still think it's sort of dumb, but I dig what he was trying to do there, you know, keep the, there's a word I'm looking for and I can't think of it, but I liked how he had himself involved like that. He even got himself a cameo in the movie and he just hand spawned a gun in one scene. I was like, well, sure, why not? You created this. Why shouldn't you be a part of it like that?
I've always considered McFarlane to be the Michael Bay of comics.
That's very apt.
And that's not, I don't mean that as an insult. Actually, Michael Bay is quite fucking intelligent. And maybe his movies aren't for you, but they are highly successful for a fucking reason. Because they appeal to the common folk, like regular fucking people. A good quote would be from one of my friends. I was talking about how I don't like Transformers movies because it's all explosions and shit. And he's like, yeah, that's exactly why I watch them. It's just dumb fucking fun and eat popcorn and watch explosions and giant robots fucking fight. I don't give a shit about the plot.
Yeah, he's honest.
That's pretty much what I think Spawn is all about. It's just fucking shit fighting and the plot is just out there, but who gives a shit? You're just in there for the entertainment.
Yeah.
I still say Michael Bay should have directed the G.I. Joe movies.
It would have improved them. But for Michael Bay, I say this. I think he is the card counter at the blackjack table. He knows what's going on enough that he's able to steal from the house, and everyone just looks at him like, what the fuck is he doing? You're not allowed to do that. Because he's the guy also at the blackjack table wearing blue jeans and a ratty t-shirt. Which isn't far from how he actually dresses either. But you know, he still cleans up at the end of the day. So, you know, at the table. So who are we to say? Maybe we're the idiots. It's just, you know, like I said, it's just when you look, if you're looking for substance from Spawn, all you'll hear is some really weird ninth grade high school level dissertation from the geeky kid in class about, well, actually this he's extreme because he's actually a demon and his powers are from hell, so it's very different than the typical traditional straight-laced superhero.
Yeah, it's like there was me, my friend Ryan Krause, and two or three other guys I knew when I went to high school that liked the comic, loved the cartoon. You know, you got to see extreme amounts of violence and naked animated titties, so what was not to love? But, you know, I do like the whole idea of I'm one man versus hell, like what they ended up turning it into. But I'm going to ask you guys, what's a character that you did not expect to see, or some, whether by name or just the type of character? Because I remember in the first couple of years of Spawn, about two or three times, they had a recurring character who was helping Spawn understand how his costume worked and about, you know, his power drain and all that. And that was Harry fucking Houdini. McFarlane was a mad genius enough to pick one of the greatest stage illusionists of ever and make him a fucking mentor to Spawn. I loved that as a kid.
Well, you have to remember that there's just so, that there was a period of time when there was a concerted effort to actually have a shared image universe that was very solid, like DC or Marvel. I'm glad that they sort of gave up on that, but like, nah, our creations are our own creations. If there's ever a crossover, we'll just be like, yeah, okay, they crossed over, but it's not really, we're not going to really reference it too much. But there was a time when there was a concerted effort to make it that solid. And there was There was an issue where he had Supreme crossover with Spawn, and we're not talking about the Alan Moore Supreme. We're talking about the Takes Himself Too Seriously by Rob Liefeld Supreme. Now that was a weird issue.
Oh, right, his hyper-violent Superman.
Yeah.
You know, the only Supreme, I don't remember that, because the only Supreme I ever read was the two, like, 12-issue runs that Alan Moore did, where he reinvented him as, like, a love letter to, like, Silver Age Superman, Silver Age and Golden Age, super kind of explore the characters of the various eras.
The only reason Supreme worked after that was because Alan Moore was very honest. He said to Rob Liefeld, I think what you wrote was garbage, but if you give me the book and tell me to not hold to any of this past continuity, I can make it into gold. And Rob Liefeld said, great, do it. And I feel like if anyone else approached, like, Todd McFarlane about that with Spawn, he would go, no, no.
You can't touch it. It's mine. Only I have the incomparable genius and vision to see this through to the end.
So he hasn't written Spawn in many, many years.
Well, I mean the whole, I want to dump all your past shit kind of thing, you know?
Because I believe he's writing it now, but I'd have to double check that.
Drawn Spawn, for instance, near the beginning.
That is true too.
It's one of the secrets that what is this? Greg Capullo dropped. Is that like issue 4? Greg Capullo took over in the art, and they never told anybody.
Now, I'm gonna ask you guys. What's your favorite piece of Spawn merchandise or media?
The movie for the Camp Factor.
And Red?
I don't know. I don't really have a favorite. The most memorable is probably the movie.
The movie's up there for me. That, like I said, that manga Spawn line from McFarlane Toys in like the late 90s, I would love. Honestly, it's a bit of a dark horse for me, but I truly love playing the Super Nintendo Spawn game from back in the day. It's broken and it's dumb, and I'm pretty sure it cheats, but I had so much fun playing that as a kid. It's up there.
There was a Super Nintendo game?
That's yeah. What I'm thinking.
Very basic, you know, side scroll, enter room, beat up guys. It's like Spawn does Final Fight, essentially.
Like, for me, the reason why the movie is so memorable, it's just so fucking bad. Like, Spawn didn't have a cape through the whole fucking thing. Looked like a dude running around in a big rubber fucking suit. Then it shows Malbolgia while he's fighting him at the end, and he has fucking JPEG fragments, for fuck's sakes.
I always thought it was dumb when he hops on that bike to rush off to save Wanda and Terry and Cyan, the little girl, and it morphs around and just turns into this weird plastic-looking cocoon shell.
Yeah. That's all stuff that McFarlane wanted in, because the producers wanted to have a fabric cape and just use CGI to enhance the cape in certain scenes, so they could just tone it down, not have to use expensive computer rendering time and hours to render the cape, because we're talking like late 90s CGI where you had to put like a whole bunch of workstation computers to run overnight to get just one scene done. So, but McFarlane insisted, no, we have to have the cape always. If the cape's there, it has to be fluttering and alive and shit. And it can't ever just be cloth. And they're like, well, if you do that, we can only have it in like 3-4 scenes tops. He's like, then do it. Only four scenes. And so that's why we have a movie where Spawn's just running around with machine guns 80% of the time.
Yeah. I mean, they wrote that in the original comics, if I'm remembering correctly, like, as so he, once he learned about his power drain, you know, he learned to, you know, like, use his costume, and he kept falling back on his human skills because, you know, was the spec ops soldier. You know, he used guns and a lot. Although that did give rise to one of my favorite scenes in the animated series. And the thing is, in the first season, he raids this CIA weapons depot. And then there's a while later, and I believe it was some of the mob that he was fighting in the episode. He blows this hole in the wall, walks in. He's got two AK-47s in each hand. And it's just Keith David's gorgeous baritone of a voice. And just knock, knock, like, literally one of the most badass action lines ever. And that's something we hadn't really mentioned is, you know, we mentioned Michael Jai White is Spawn in the movie, and, you know, Black Dynamite and a lot of Blood and Bone, couple of great movies that he's done. He's really good in action. He's an action actor. Like, he can act, he knows martial arts. We've seen him in Arrow, he's Bronze Tiger. But they got Keith Motherlovin' David to voice Spawn. Like, the voice of Goliath in Gargoyles is Spawn. And that made half the show right there, because he just had that sinister kind of edge, like he was about to go off at any given moment. And I'd have to look up, but I don't know if you know, Ben, who voiced the Violator and the Clown in the show?
I don't know, but I didn't even really watch the animated show too much. It was just so... it was just more of the same for me. It was just Spawn in Pog form.
You can't say that these days. Pog means completely different, something completely different to Millennial.
It's not Milk Top anymore?
No one ever knew that's what it was. And just looking at the wiki here, is Michael Nicolosi was the voice of the clown, and James Haynes was the voice of Violator.
I see.
Oh, how about that? Black Manta's dad from the Aquaman movie was the voice of Terry Fitzgerald.
Don't know much else we can say about Spawn. I think we made our feelings on the character and the comic pretty clear. Again, all respect to McFarlane for making a media empire out of Spawn, but I would never consider it great comic writing. Anyone else have any final thoughts?
I really just want to get that original Spawn figure in the Spawnmobile, and I'll die happy.
Red?
I remember my friend shaving down the original Spawn figure and turning it into Silver Surfer.
You should have taken a picture and sent it to McFarlane. All right, this is yours, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.